Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Right. So yeah, I wanted a coffee, but of course, the bloody lazy bastard's not open till 9:30.
Is it 9:30?
Well, what time did we get there last week?
Yeah, it was about 9:30.
Yeah. So I was like, oh god, so I'm gonna have to wait. I was gonna have a Tenzing. I can't do a Tenzing in the morning. Do you know what I mean? I can't hit a
it's
warm.
Like having a Red Bull in the morning.
Yeah. Or well, like if it was like the middle of the summer and it was 25 degrees outside, I'd have a Tenzing, but. It's not. It's January still. Just
yeah.
I wouldn't. I just wanted a nice warm coffee.
8:30 in the morning.
8:30 in the morning. I just wanted a nice bloody flat white and this bloody studio's in the middle of nowhere. Right. Hey,
oh, well, it's not the middle of nowhere. I mean, there's a high street literally there.
That's very far away, though, isn't it?
There must be a coffee shop there.
I got no battery on the i5, so I ain't going anywhere.
Really?
Yeah. Genuinely, it's down to 7%. But so there's a high speed charge, just like. 2 miles down the road, so I think I'll make it. The range is saying 7. No. I think the range is saying 12 miles. Anyway.
12 miles?
12 miles, yeah. That's fine. Plenty, isn't it?
Well, I don't know.
Hello, one and all, and welcome to Behind the Glass, your weekly automotive podcast hosted by two rather uninformed enthusiasts.
Nah.
I'm Sam from the YouTube channel Seen Through Glass.
I'm Tony from Gravelwood Car Sales.
And you can watch us each week. We hope you enjoy the episode.
Morning, mate.
Morning.
How you doing?
All right.
Have you woken up?
Yes, I fully woke up. Been travelling for over 2 hours this morning.
You have. You got absolutely screwed by some numpty driving into another numpty on the M25, didn't
you? Yeah, I don't know exactly what happened because I didn't see it, but there was an hour delay on the M25, basically.
Mm.
You're one end of the M25 and I'm the other.
Yeah.
And I have to come round it. And someone's piled it into the wall and at the back of someone. I don't know. It's been a crash.
All over the place.
Yeah.
International listeners or non-London-based listeners, M25 is the ring road around central London. It's arguably one of the worst roads, I think, in the world for multiple reasons, not just in terms of surface, but in terms of characteristics, the people that drive on it, the way people drive on it, the amount of traffic it seems to experience. I despise the M25.
It's easily the busiest road in our country, for sure. And probably, actually, when I think, it's probably one of the busiest roads in Europe.
Oh, that's a punchy claim.
Yeah, I don't. As I'm thinking now, when I think of bad traffic, Rome comes to mind.
Yeah. Definitely does.
Paris comes to mind.
Absolutely.
Apart from that, really, I've never really got... Oh, Belgium.
Belgium. There's this traffic in Belgium 24/7.
Yeah.
I don't know what that's all about.
Yeah. And Lyon as well.
Lyon always... If you're driving... through Lyon to go further south, or if you're coming from the south, so Italy, south of France, whatever, back north, for some reason Lyon is always just awful.
Yeah,
chock-a-block is the expression, isn't it? Chock-a-block.
They're going into cities.
We're on the
M25 ring road.
what would you say is that at any one point is at least 10 miles from the center of London, would you say? If you're on the M25 to get into
At least.
Piccadilly Circus, it's always about 10 miles.
At least.
It's a decent distance, yeah. So you're not exactly in the city.
No.
But, yeah, essentially gets you around the city, and obviously so many different commuters and things that happen on the outer edges of London. You know, it's a super popular road, and it's a key road if you're down here, but I just despise it. If I have to go anywhere and it says, take the M25, I'm like, nope. I'll just find a different route.
But I have to go on it every day, mate.
Well, yeah, I would assume you have to use it all the time.
Every single day there's a part of the M25 that I have to travel on.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
Yeah.
And we're trialling different recording times at the moment. Daddy daycare has started for me. My daughter has now started nursery, so Mondays have become daddy daycare, and that usually was our recording days, so I can't do that anymore because it would be quite intense to do one of these running around in the background.
Unless we managed to squeeze in an hour while she was asleep.
Oh, I don't think that's going to happen, trust me. That would be very nerve-wracking. So we're juggling around time. So today we were aiming for like a really early recording, which is maybe why we sound a little bit croaky. We were going for like a 7:30 start time, but then traffic
got stuck.
It's now 8:45, so we're both just a little bit frustrated.
We'll persevere, mate. We'll figure it out in the end.
We'll get there, and don't worry, we will continue to bring you episodes on a Thursday for now.
Continue for now.
100% of the time, 90% of the time. Anyway, mate, I have lots to update you on, but I want to firstly hear about your weekend and your week, what you've been up to, where you've been, what's been going on.
Where have I been? I've been very busy at work.
Lovely. Any nice juicy bits of stock come in?
Not really, to be honest. What's, apart from two or three lumpier cars that I've sold this month, everything that I've sold has been under 30 grand.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Everything. And normally I've changed my, or I'm starting to change my stock slightly for that reason. I would normally be at 20 grand up stock wise. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I've got some cheaper stuff in stock because it's selling. And the president at the moment is that everything I'm selling is 30 grand down. So I'm busy.
Yeah.
So the problem is I've still got a lot of stuff that's 30 grand up.
Well, I had a pretty wild weekend, mate. We have a lot to discuss. I went down to Austria for the FAT International Ice Race, which used to be the GP Ice Race.
Uh-huh.
But I went with Minnie.
Yeah.
Drove down there in a classic Mini.
Did you get there?
Absolutely got there. We're going to get into all of that. At the ice race, there was the new Golf GTI, the new Golf R, the new Porsche Panamera, and a whole load of other cars that need to be discussed.
From factory?
Yeah. All factory supported.
Well.
But we need to go all the way back to the start of my adventure because I went to collect, or we started our journey at least, at the BMW Group Classic Building in Munich.
Yeah.
Now, we obviously had that amazing experience with Porsche, the Porsche Museum, where we went to the sort of warehouses in the back and got that amazing tour from Benny. Well, I think BMW can rival that.
Can they?
1,500 cars.
Oh, wow.
In the BMW Group Classic Museum or archive or storage. Everything from fully fledged Formula One cars through to concepts, through the things that no one's ever seen, through the things that BMW just supplied the engines for example, McLaren F1.
Similar to Porsche, it's like a shutaway warehouse.
Yes, it's not, as far as I'm aware, open to the public.
Okay, fine.
This is the sort of Group Classic building. So they have a workshop there. They have a fully fledged workshop there. So you can, as a customer, send your car to BMW Classic to be worked on and restored by them. But then they have their own collection too.
Yep.
Some of which run, not many. In the sense that it's not an active fleet. They can't make them run. Yeah, a part of it is an active fleet.
Right.
But for example, so the cars that I wanted to pick out, the two things that blew my mind. There was an X5, start off, the first gen X5 with the Le Mans car engine from the BMW 1999 Le Mans winning.
V10.
I think it was the V12 LMR.
V12
Le Mans engine. This was essentially the premise, the start of an X5 M car. So they were sitting there, they had this X5, and they thought, you know, it'd be interesting to see this performance-wise. Like, what could we do with an X5? Like, it's selling well. Like, let's look at this. I know what we should do. Let's stick the V12 Le Mans engine, over 700 horsepower.
Was it all in the front or some of it in the
all
back?
All in the front.
Right.
Fully fledged. They just popped open the bonnet. There is a Le Mans engine. It was outrageous. It had the Nürburgring lap record for ages. They took it around the Nürburgring. It was the fastest SUV in the world.
I wonder if that's loosely the Rolls-Royce engine.
No.
Right.
So this is that was a legit race car engine.
Fair.
Put in the X5.
Right.
As a, like, can an SUV have dynamic performance?
Yeah, yeah.
And that was like, okay, this is actually a thing. And then they went and built the first X5M. So yeah, forget the fact that this is a V12. It's a fully fledged race car engine. Yeah, but of course they had the Rolls-Royce engines there.
They did, yeah.
And alongside this crazy X5, they had a 7 Series. So the boxy shape, I'm guessing like the E30 something. Like
the James
7
Bond,
Series.
Like the James Bond
yeah,
car.
Ish, yeah. Right. Maybe a generation before. With a V16.
Isn't it amazing what these manufacturers experiment with?
Dude, I loved it. It's so cool. And we saw a bit of it at Porsche, but it's exactly that. It's engineers, it's marketing, it's development, it's R&D, whatever, just going, well, let's give it a go and let's see. And they did talk us through some of the reasoning, and I can't quite remember what it was, but essentially they took two V12s, cut them or removed four cylinders from each.
Stuck it together.
But because the engine was so big, they couldn't fit the radiators in front of it. So the radiators were in the back. So then you had these kind of insane 911 turbo-like ducts on the side of the 7 Series. It was wild, dude. It was wild. It did like literally 0.5 mpg.
Yeah, I bet.
It was insane. And they ran it a few times and they said it wasn't that smooth. It wasn't that nice. And they were like, nah.
Dead. We can't do this.
And obviously, they're not the only ones. Rolls-Royce had that V16 4, which is finished in the Johnny English film, and that's sort of Phantom Coupe or whatever. Yeah, yeah. There are a few others here and there. So V16s have kind of been thought of every now and again. So that was super cool to see. There was a Superleggera mini concept. I don't know if you remember, they did these like Superleggera style Barchetta-y type, really cool cars from like 2014, I think, or something like that. They were amazing to see. Just like, it's just fun.
Endless
cool.
List, yeah.
Endless
yeah.
Stuff, yeah. And stuff I say which never saw the light of day or with a development. And I find that stuff way more exciting and interesting than, you know, this was the car that won this, or this is the car that, this was the first Z3. There was a Z3 with, oh, what engine did they put in the Z3? There was like a Z3 with like a V12 or like a V8 or something. Insane.
It was a death trap.
But yeah, absolute death
full
trap.
Full on death trap.
There was wild stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. I should have asked. I don't know if you can go and buy tickets or have a look around. I don't know how you get invited to do that. I was so lucky that I had the chance. It was a very brief look. So obviously, we were there doing stuff with Mini. I was paid by Mini to help basically promote the fact that they were taking part in the ice race event.
Yeah.
So
they're going to do it every year?
Well, I think this was their sort of tester, I guess.
Right, okay.
I think they were like, let's draw some attention to it. Let's see what the feedback is. Let's see what the experience is like. And then we'll judge it. So I was there strictly with Mini. And so the tour of the BMW, I was like getting really overexcited and like celebrating. And the BMW guys were loving it. But the Mini guys were like, so should we just, look, there's some Minis over there. I was like, cool, 2 seconds.
I've always liked Minis though.
Oh, mate.
I've always liked little Minis.
Always loved Minis. Yeah. My sister's had 2 or 3. I had that Clubman JCW for a while, obviously. And they're just icons, right?
Yeah, they are, yeah. They lost their way a little bit when they made Minis not really Minis anymore, in the Clubman, the Countryman, whatever else they make now that's a variation of a Mini. But I've always liked them.
Did you ever own or live with a classic Mini, as in the smaller ones?
No, never
at all.
Never.
But then you say you thought they lost their way when they got bigger, but I think a lot of the modern age Coopers have been very good.
I don't mean they've lost their way. What I mean is that they had to move in the market, and you know, and they sort of had to build Mini SUVs, which is what they did because that was the market.
You mean the Countrymans?
Yeah, the Countrymans and the Clubmans as well.
But the Clubman had a little bit more authenticity to it because there was a Clubman back in the day, and size-wise, comparatively to an actual Cooper, it's kind of bang on. So I think the Clubman is... I don't knock the Clubman at all.
Yeah.
But the Countryman...
It's not really a Mini, though, is it? I mean,
but it's the same size as a Cooper.
Yeah. But what I'm trying to say to you is that a Mini, really, in my eyes, is what you went to...
A classic Mini.
A classic Mini. It says it in the name, Mini.
But there were Clubmans of that era.
Correct, there was, yeah, in that size.
Yeah.
But the new ones, even the normal Minis, they're not Minis anymore, mate. They're huge. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
And they're... huge. People got cross with us calling the Arnic 5 huge. They're big, and they're big comparatively to, example, an Abarth. Because they're the Minis, fair enough, everything has to get bigger. As I learned, those old Minis had close to no safety, precautions. The cars had to change.
Of course.
100%. They couldn't be made anymore. Bit like old Defenders. So,
yeah.
So that's fine. That's fair enough. But it would have been all right if they'd remained the smallest in class, like Toyota Aygo or Citroen, what's that little
C1.
Box? C1, you know, so that I think you would have been like, okay, you know, they're still trying to be the smallest out there,
yeah.
But they didn't, they kind of
beefed it up.
Yeah. But I mean, I think they've been good. There've been plenty of modern day Coopers, especially the JCW stuff, which I've really liked.
Yeah.
But you're right, they're not Mini anymore.
Yeah.
And the Countryman is massive.
Yeah, and the GP is a riot. GP that have got one of them in stock, they're a riot. Yeah. So. They're a proper focused toy.
Yeah. Basically. No, I went into it in the same frame of mind as you, as being like, cool, great, like what a nice invite. Like, go and spend a weekend driving Minis, hanging out with the Mini team, and all I have to do is just promote the fact they're going to ice race. Like, lovely. And also, they were an amazing team in the sense that they were super chill. They're like, I've never driven a Mini. I've never been sat in a classic Mini before.
I'm surprised you got in.
Yeah, I thought that, but oh my God, mate.
There was room.
So much room.
Mm.
It was like mind-boggling. At first, I was like, this is going to be nerve-wracking. We worked out over 300 miles across the weekend in classic Minis. One from 2000, from the year 2000. So one of the last old-shaped Minis.
Yeah.
And then a 1960s rally car. Super comfortable in both.
Wow.
Like, genuinely comfortable. And then it was me and Amy Shaw, amazing photographer, mm-hmm. Amy Shaw. Both had loads, all our equipment bags in with us. We were reaching around, grabbing cameras, moving stuff, tripods, getting stuff in and out. I genuinely was like, oh my God, this car is so usable.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Who would have thought it? It's like a magician's hat. You just kept pulling stuff out of it.
Yeah.
And the ride, I'm giving away too much because there's the main channel video coming. But anyway, I was so pleasantly surprised by the classic Mini experience. Like, really, really enjoyed it. And, you know, that's my kind of adventure.
Yeah.
Like, load into a car that's, you don't think it's really a car that you should be doing 300 miles in and just go and have a blast. And one of my favorite parts of the world, south of Munich, into Austria. Like, I love that whole area.
Very pretty.
Very pretty. We had an absolutely great time. And as I say, there is a main channel video coming, which actually Mini didn't ask me to do, but I just thought this is a cool experience. And if I'm going to be here making some Instagram content, might as well make a video as well.
Yeah, so why not?
That is on the way. But we headed off to Zelamce, where we were in the summer last year, for the ice race event. Now, this was my fourth time attending the ice race, the first time since 2020 that it's actually taken place.
Oh yeah, because it got called off because of COVID.
Called off because there wasn't enough snow. It's just always been a bit of a headache. There wasn't really enough snow this year either.
What a shame.
So as we arrived on the Friday night, so the night before the event, rain everywhere, barely any snow. I was like, oh God. But they'd been kind of working hard to ensure that whatever happened, there was still some kind of event.
Yeah.
And they pulled it out of the bag. Like, it was still a wicked event somehow. The ice track lasted half a day, probably. By the end of the day, it was a mud track.
Right.
But they rebranded it the slush race at the start of the day, which I thought was quite fun. And everything that was going on in and around the ice track was just fun. Everyone was having a good time. Loads of cool cars, loads of good food, loads of nice people. That Fat International brand has become like a really freaking cool fashion brand. So there were fashionista people. Mark Webber was there. Who else was there? Valtteri Bottas was there. Andreas Pruninger was there. Who else did I see? There was just people knocking around. Vonta Roll.
Well, can't they look at maybe relocating it to guarantee snow?
there's a historic reason why it takes place in that city.
Right.
The links to, it's an old event, and the links to Porsche, because one of the people involved, the main person involved, is Ferdy Porsche.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah, it's linking, it's tying into the history. That's the whole point of the event. But they're trialing one in Colorado, in Aspen, in like 2 or 3 weeks' time.
Yeah.
So I think, I would imagine that the Fat Ice Race Zell-Am-Say will be rebranded Fat International or Fat Zell-Am-Say, and it'll just be a gathering without the focus on the ice. And then maybe the ice race will become the Aspen event. I don't know. They're branching out. We went to the cafe last year.
Yeah, we did, yeah.
They're doing it. And it's so much more, it's really about a community thing.
Okay.
They're always just, it's just a great event to be at. Mm. I always have the absolutely best time, even if what was planned didn't go ahead. But yeah, lots of manufacturer support this year. So rolling into the event, I saw a bronzy gold Panamera in the traffic and I went,
new one?
Oh, I think that's the new Panamera. I didn't really get a good enough angle of it. So then I went and tracked it down when we got into the event. Underwhelming. Well, so it was in a lineup of other Panameras and I was like, yep, there it is.
It's just a facelift, a bit like the Cayenne, right?
Feels like it, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I just, cool.
Yeah.
Don't have a lot else to say. I mean, no. I'm sure it'll be good, but they didn't make really a big deal of it. They just kind of stuck it somewhere and I was like, all right.
I bet if there was a new Taycan there, they'd have made a big deal out of it.
Yeah, yeah. They made big deals out of Taycans anyway. So, it was you know, fairly interesting to see. But Volkswagen were making a big deal of their stand because it was 50 years of the Golf.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a fully uncovered new GTI. So that's the last combustion-engined GTI.
8.5.
Yeah. Which I think they're going to stretch out all the way until the 9 comes in, because the 9's all electric.
Is it?
Yeah, so I think that's supposed to last for a while now, I think.
So that'd be 4 or 5 years or whatever.
I think so, okay. Yeah. Right. Inside looks really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Inside looks really nice. I know that the old, or the current car, I guess the 8, had a lot of infotainment issues, didn't it?
Did, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm hoping...
Probably sorted that out now.
I'm hoping they've ironed that out, because the interior did look nice and a bit more premium, if anything.
Okay.
It looked heavy. Like, I can't help but look at that car.
So does the Mark 8, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just, you know... It looks like very identical. Only I think the expert eye would have picked up on the differences between the 8 and 8.5. But the interior is definitely a big step forward.
But there needs to be, mate, because there are a few quid.
Yeah.
Golf R's.
No, this was the GTI.
Yeah, yeah. But GTIs and R's. They're just a few quid. I think the Mark 8 started at 32 or 32 and a half grand.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And they're expensive.
Yeah.
I think a Golf R is... touch under 40. It probably is over 40 now with the new one.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It's expensive.
So they had a, how would you call it? I guess a pre-production R there. This was the official unveiling of some kind of form of the R. It was still all stickered up. You couldn't really see much, but that was the first debut of the R. It's going to be officially unveiled, I think, later in the year.
Yeah.
But it ran around the ice track. Sounded like a Hoover.
Yeah.
Obviously
yeah.
just like killed by all the filters.
Yeah, yeah.
That will be a 20... Well, what year is it? It'll be a 2025 car. So it was going around the track. Actually, this is quite a funny story. So, you know, it's a motorsport event, right? And there was loads of historic vehicles there. So they have old Porsches and old rally cars. They had an amazing Audi S1 rally car that was just giving it large. So all the stuff, making loads of noise. And at one point they put that Audi, I don't even know what it is, like a futuristic concept. The Hoonitron? Hoonitron?
Okay, no idea.
The Ken Block electric Audi Hoonitron thing. And it was going around making no noise.
Mm.
And there was this old Beetle, this old like Dakar Rally Beetle, and he launched it up the inside of the Hoonitron.
Yeah,
and
good.
The crowd went wild.
Did they?
The crowd absolutely loved it. And I was like, that really tells us. And so when the Golf R was just doing laps quietly, everyone was a bit... And then the Skoda...
Should we go get coffee?
Yeah, Skoda WRC came past like... Oh, yeah, and everyone was like, yeah! So, tough crowd for that car. But still cool to see. And they had a whole lineup of all the Golfs. They had a Mark IV R32, which I absolutely adored. They had some cool stuff knocking around. Loads of other cool people. I went to see Roof. They had a couple of their cars on display, which was very, very cool to see.
Is it Ruff or Roof?
I say Roof.
Right.
I say Roof.
No idea.
R-U-F. Roof, I think. It's Gel Roof, I guess. Well, we can find out. some other interesting people there, like, you know, sort of resto mod companies and people sort of work a lot of Porsche stuff. I mean, it's a big Porsche community sure. Yeah. But it was a great event, and as I say, for me to be able to experience some classic minis was amazing. Went for a ride in the Mini Dakar.
Was that good?
Wild.
Was it?
Insane.
I would have liked that.
You would have been like, go faster.
Okay.
The driver was Bruno Spengler, was a DTM champion, I think 2012 was like that for BMW. And he was going as flat as he could. Like towards the end of the day, he was sending it, but it was, yeah, just the track didn't allow for him to go that fast.
What a shame.
The car that, as I say, you would have wanted to go into it was the Audi S1 rally car
was it?
Mate, he was flying.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want one of those.
Yeah.
Really, really cool.
I really, really admire rally drivers.
Full send.
Mate, they got screw loose.
Yeah, oh, 1,000,000%.
They're not wired. They're like, it's like the Isle of Man TT bike racers.
You're right.
They're just not wired up correctly.
You are completely correct.
It's not funny, mate.
No. Well, it was quite funny to watch.
But. Yeah, but you're not going in 150 mile an hour past a tree sideways. It's not.
No, they were wild. They were trying to crash, I think, during the ice race event. But anyway, as I say, main channel video coming very soon on that whole experience. And hopefully I'll be able to get back and do some more work with Mini at some point. And if not, go and do a bit more of a tour of the BMW Group Classic warehouse / showroom thing. Because, yeah, that was pretty special. Anyway, time to move on. We are going to be talking about the Macan EV in a second. But first up, we have Stockwatch.
We need to
get a theme tune.
Yeah, we do. And save you doing it. We need to.
Hey, if you've got any music producers out there, any DJs, we want something very simple. It should just go Stockwatch.
Yeah. We need to get like an edit put in there.
I don't want 10 or 15 seconds. We haven't got time for it. I'm just going to push a button and it goes Stockwatch. Just like that. If you can record, I should stop doing it.
Yeah, you should. Yeah.
This week, we're very kindly being sponsored by the legends at Custodian. You've probably heard me talk about Custodian before. If you want to manage your garage digitally, that is your one-stop shop, your place to go. You can set yourself reminders. You can upload invoices, car history, all your photos. This is the ultimate place, I say, to manage your cars. But last year, they also launched The Showroom, which at the moment, I'd say still a bit more of a specialist version of like an auto trader, but I think they're trying to expand it to kind of rival
basically
that.
Classified ad, right?
Classified ads, yeah. Over 1,000 cars on there, I think, at the moment. God, they keep telling me how many dealers on there, but multiple. UK-based and lots and lots of nice stuff. So we've had a little jump on, try to dig out some cars that jumped out to us. I will kickstart. I've got two.
Oh.
I've got to start with this one.
Go on.
So, listen, I believe...
got a story about one of these.
Apollo? So I've never heard of Apollo as a dealer before.
Me too.
Up here on Custodian. And this is a 2005 Bentley Continental GT for £16,995. Now, I was like, oh, it's going to have 400,000 miles. So it's got less than 50,000 miles on the clock. Now, I know what you're going to say.
Looks like a lovely one.
But hold on a sec. It does look like a lovely one. Dark blue with the lovely red interior with the wood. Banging.
It's not so lovely, but okay.
Split rims, the whole thing. Now, okay.
Split rims, I remember them.
There's a reason why this car is circa 17 grand. I get that. But at 17 grand, to cruise around in a Bentley that most people won't know if that is a 2005 car or a 2015 car, because let's face it, they hardly changed them in that period of time.
No.
I mean, that is a vibe. If you have the 50 grand in the bank to run it, the 50 grand cash to keep it going, but also like maybe it's not going to be that bad.
You know, one of the dealers I deal with called me up last week and offered me one of them in the trade.
Go on.
Do you want me to tell you how much it was? Yeah. I was actually going to
send you a
2004 or 2005 car, something like that, with 78,000 miles.
I would have bought it.
All Bentley history apart from a couple.
What colour? Do you remember?
Black. Black with black.
Take it.
10.5
grand. Oh, I actually would have bought that. I actually would have bought that.
But mate, honestly, that is... I mean, that is literally more than 10 grand a year to run. It's not funny.
Yeah,
at that
you're
point.
Walking into a financial death trap.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But if you're Matt Armstrong, or if you're mechanically minded, or you've got a friendly workshop that's going to, you know, help guide you through, not going to rip you off, but just help take you through the steps of what's needed, just to keep it kind of running and you're prepared for breakdowns and issues. And I just can't not see a Bentley Continental GT at sub 20K and not go, oh, come on.
No, mate, they're unbelievable value for money, of course, but you just wouldn't want to run one. You just wouldn't, mate.
They got better, right? Because the 2013, 14, 15 V8Ss, they're circa 70K.
Yeah.
They're good.
Mm.
Better.
But what I told you a while ago about the 17 grand or 16 grand bill I had for the turbos, and that was a V8.
Yeah.
The W12s are a stronger engine than the V8.
Fair. I love that. So yeah.
It's a wafter, isn't it?
It's a wafter.
Yeah.
Yeah, lovely photos, and there you go, all the key information. So
fair.
I think it's good. Move on, my next choice. Now this one, I'm pulling out because I actually can't believe where we've gone with this. So this is Contemporary Classics, another dealer listed on Custodian.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lime green Clio V6.
Mm.
Have you seen it yet?
Oh, mate, that
2004
is...
2004 car, 3,000 miles on the clock, listed, advertised at £90,000. Now, I was just perusing Custodian, as I often do, because I say they've got the kind of cars that I like on there. And this popped out, and I went, no way. At first, I was like, they're taking the piss a bit. Like, sorry, Contemporary Classics, but come on. They've got two others in stock. One is price and application. The other, I think with decent miles, was like 55, 60 grand.
The problem is, mate, I don't agree with the price. The problem is, from their point of view as a dealer, go and find another one.
Well, but this is the whole thing.
There ain't another one, mate.
But they're not wrong. They're not that far off.
No.
Obviously,
this is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This is a very low mileage, unique colored, blah, blah, blah. I'm kind of wondering if it's Schmee's. Didn't Schmee paint his like this? Anyway, sorry, Tim, if this is your car and we're now ripping it apart. But the point being, these are sought after collector cars. This is a particularly good example in its color. And for non-collector versions, you are still, I think, looking at 40 or 50 grand.
Unbelievable.
For a Clio V6.
I mean, I had one of these about 15 years ago, by the way. I've told this story before, I think. And it was horrendous, the car.
It's the quickest way to get into a tree, isn't it?
Even back then, it wasn't that fast. It had the turning circle of a, I can't even say a bus or a lorry because they got a better turning circle.
Of an airplane.
A cruise liner.
Cruise liner, okay,
it
there you
go. It was disastrous, like half a turn, full lock.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was just terrible. Servicing was back then, there was a fortune on them because they used to take the Mickey.
But they are cool, though, aren't they?
They look
they
amazing.
They look amazing.
And you remember back then, like, you had used one of them used to bolt down the road, and it did make an half-decent noise. Well, it didn't go anywhere. It's a bit like your 360.
Oh, I knew that was coming. I could see the clogs turning.
Yeah. Not,
a bit
not,
like you and your GT3, mate.
Not the Challenger Dali, the old one. I can't,
sure.
I'm not mocking the Challenger Dali. I'm going to be nice
about it. It's not that much faster, I've got to be honest.
Is it not?
Well, no, it's only 20 horsepower more than 100
really
kilos lighter. It's not night and day.
Right.
You're not going to follow me in the Challenger Dali and go, bloody hell, that thing's fast.
He's flying.
I had an R8 V10 follow me out of my parents the other day, and he was in cruise control. I think I was giving it large.
Yeah.
I was like, when he just cruised past me.
While you're talking about that old cars, actually, I had a genuine argument with my daughter the other day. We had an argument. We was
Go
in the
on.
Cars in the M3, and we was following a V8 R8.
Okay.
And she said, "Daddy, is that fast, that car?" I said, "It was a long time ago, but not anymore." He said, "But Daddy, it must be. It's far. It looks far. It must be fast." I said, "This car's faster." She said, "No, it's not." I said, "It's genuinely like not even a little bit faster. Be loads faster, Molly." Mm. No, Daddy,
that's a supercar.
Yeah, that car's
this
faster.
This is Daddy's car. That's
she,
a supercar.
She talks like an orphan. She doesn't talk like a baby, mate. She talks like a human being. She just talks completely normal. She's not
right,
two.
Chill out. Well, tell me a two-year-old who goes, that's a supercar.
Yeah, they do.
Okay, all right.
But anyway, it was the funniest thing. Like, people, just association. So people would have looked at that 15 years ago and thought, that must be the fastest thing in the world.
Well, you know, I say, they've become a collector's item. So I think the point being that if you are into this world, that's probably one of the better examples that you can find. But, you know, these guys have a few in stock. It jumped out at me.
I don't remember them being out in that colour, though.
Is that Schmee's car? Didn't Schmee paint one that colour?
I thought they only come in a few colours, silver and black or... I don't remember them being multicoloured, mate.
No, but...
And blue.
They did do a few more. They definitely did do a few more. So this one, here we go, information on custodian. Yeah, supplied in acid yellow. One of 8 UK examples supplied in acid yellow. Yeah,
never seen one.
Oh, sorry, I haven't covered 13,000 miles from you. Anyway.
Nice. I mean,
absolutely wild. Your pick...
Yep.
Was this, unsurprisingly, a 2019 488 Pista?
Yeah.
Why has this jumped out at you?
Well, because I said at the back end of last year that they'd been fairly strong in the depreciation market, mm-hmm. as in, but they have started to tail off a bit now. There are some up at silly money still, but they have come off now. And although they are still the money they are, I still think they're like good value for money in the supercar world.
So this is a smidgen under 300 grand.
Yeah.
Which I think this particular example is a bit of a bargain, mate. Because you look at the other things that are out there, Speciales, over, 350,
yeah,
something like that?
Yeah.
Anything else of that kind of ilk? You got... 296s, which we know, like 240, 250.
Well, you still look at all the Pista competitors.
Mm-hmm.
You probably just about include the STO in that. And the Pista's the cheapest or just under the cheapest out of all of them. Still cheaper than the GT2.
Which I think is unbelievable.
Yeah. Still cheaper
in
than
our
the Black
mind,
Series.
It's the best one.
Yeah. In maybe not for...
So what are you trying to say? You're trying to say this is good value or that they're now coming off? Or that, like, what are you trying to say?
What am I trying to say? I'm saying they have come off a bit.
Okay, so if you're looking to buy a Pista, now could be a good time.
I think 300 strong for a used Pista now.
Oh, do you?
I do, yeah. I think they've come off a bit.
Interesting, okay.
Yeah.
So if you really play hardball, you could be at, 280?
I don't know if you're going to get a good one, though, for 280.
Okay.
But, you know, but some of them are still advertised at 330, 340.
Oh, there are plenty. I had a brief look, there are plenty.
You know.
Okay.
I think you know, the really low mileage cars need to be 300 now.
Yeah.
But the good thing about special Ferraris, and there's millions of them, they always get to a point and they stop.
Well, that's what I say.
They just do normally.
Or they start to trickle back up.
Yeah. I mean, there's probably too many of them to do that currently. Mm. But yeah, maybe long term, they're definitely not going to blow 50 or 60 grand. No.
For me, that's a lovely spec, that one you put there, the red with the silver wheels. It's kind of a classic piece to spec. I think it's super, super nice.
Yeah.
So good shout. Well, anyway, thank you, Custodian, for supporting Stockwatch this week. There are some cars that
Tony and I... Can I put it in the front, not the end?
Yeah, that Tony and I have spotted, listed on Custodian's showroom at the moment. So go and have a browse there, or go and check out those cars if you're interested in any of the ones that we just discussed. Let's come on to the big topic then. We were hoping to talk about it last week, but we didn't, so we can now get into it. Porsche have unveiled the new Macan.
Yeah.
Now, I quite like saying that, because it's not they've unveiled the new Macan Electric, the new Macan EV, the new Macan E. It's just the new Macan. And it just happens to be electric.
Electric car, yeah.
So tell me all your initial thoughts now that the press releases are out and blah, 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 blah. Yeah. First reactions, go on, hit me.
Well, initially when I saw, I've only seen photographs
of course
it, obviously, I thought that looks not very nice.
Oh really?
And yeah, and then like after seeing it a bit more, it does look okay. It looks fine.
I like the way it looks.
Do you?
I'm one of the few.
Yeah.
A lot of people are like, oh, it's the most ugly thing ever. This thing hasn't had. Paul was fuming about it in the group chat.
Yeah,
it was disgusting.
What does he know,
though? I think the back looks a little bulbous, but I really like the front. Mm. I think from the side it looks all right. So
yeah, like I said, I've come round to it a bit more now. I need to probably see one in the person.
Yes, well, because I can't figure out the dimensions. It's long. It's quite a bit longer than the previous, the combustion engine Macan.
It definitely looks it.
But it's lower and wider.
Is it though?
Yeah.
Or
it's lower and wider.
Is that just a perception?
No. It's lower and wider.
Right.
But longer.
Right.
So I think that's going to be a bit...
odd.
Yeah, so I'm with you. I want to see one to kind of... I can't... In my head, I can't work out how that will translate to on-the-road presence. Macans have always been fairly well-sized, sort of, you know, for an SUV.
They have.
So anyway, so yeah, dimensions I can't figure it out, but as a photo, I like the looks of it. I'm gonna lean in that direction.
I'd be interested to see whether there'll still be Porsche's best-selling car.
Okay, well, let's keep going. We're going to dive into all of these facts and stats and claims. Mm. So you saw the photos, you thought, okay. What about some of the headline information? What were your reactions to that?
The price.
Clearly that caught you first. So
it's way too much money. I mean, it's not... Hold on a minute. The way that cars, electric cars... It was always going to be expensive, right? But I really just don't understand, mate, how they think they're going to sell them in the masses that they sold the previous models in.
Okay, so let's dive into this for a second, because I think actually price is the most important thing about this car initially.
It's the most important thing in general.
So
full stop.
So the Macan 4, which is at the moment the entry level Macan, electric Macan. In the UK, starts at essentially 70 grand. That's with no options.
Starts.
The Turbo, which is the next one up, the performance one, starts at 95. Now, obviously, you could just go in and say, I'll have a Macan 4, please, and walk away at 70 grand plus road tax, etc.
Which would be, by the way, probably the equivalent 2-litre petrol Macan in old money, essentially.
No, well, hold on a sec. Because we need to, we're going to get into actual direct comparisons. Let's not, because, wait, what I want to say, please, before we get into it, because the most important thing to realise about Porsche is that it is near on impossible to get the car you want for the advertised list price.
Absolutely.
I went on the configurator and both went really aggressive, as in like, I want as few options as possible. I want to keep the price as low as possible. I couldn't get below 82 grand for the Macan 4 just to have sound and light, just the usable stuff, just the kind of stuff that just enhanced the experience. That was me personally. Obviously, someone else out there could say, I'll just take the 70 grand car, be happy. I got above 100 grand on the base Macan 4, going wild.
I bet you did.
And of course, the Macan Turbo, you can get into silly figures if you want. Now, let's come on to your point for a second, because interestingly, in the UK, you can still buy the combustion engine Macan. They haven't put a final date on production yet, but you can still go and order a combustion engine Macan in the UK.
In the old shape or the new shape?
In the old shape. Right. I don't believe they're putting an engine in the new shape. I think that is specifically made for, So let's get into pricing, because you were about to say that in terms of old money, this money, converting and comparisons. Yeah. So the cheapest petrol Macan in the UK, the base level Macan, starts at £53,000.
Some £17,000 cheaper.
And the top level, which is the GTS in the UK these days, £71,000.
Yeah.
So if you weren't to do any spec choices, as in you weren't to add anything, just go in and say, I want a car, you could get a Macan GTS with a petrol engine for essentially the same price as the Macan 4 electric.
Yeah.
And the GTS does include a lot more driver-focused spec as standard.
Yeah, there's still loads of options. You can still put 20 grand worth of options without blinking your eye on a GTS. Same with a normal Macan, mate,
as well. But my point being that the GTS does include a lot of spec as standard.
Yeah, yeah, so, more at least, yeah.
So if you took a base GTS at list price at 71 grand or a base Macan 4 at least price at 70 grand,
you would
have more stuff, more equipment, more things on that petrol
you
GTS.
Would, yeah.
So I come round to it in the sense of there's little justification, because if this was just a refresh, near 20 grand price hike, you can't really justify it.
And you bet your life that the options would be more on the electric car than the combustion car as well.
Yeah, potentially. Potentially, I'd be interested.
Almost sure there will be, yeah.
So, yes, you fall into that question then of, right, you're now looking at a very expensive car, which, okay, fine, you could argue company, tax and all these things can take advantage of, but Macan has forever been the best-selling Porsche because it's the family car, right?
Yeah,
everyman, theoretically, Porsche.
Yeah, yeah.
Has that price point removed it from being that, or the potential for it to be that?
But not necessarily. They'll just be targeting a different audience. But the it's not always the price with EVs that's the problem. It's everything else that goes with it. We spoke about 4 million times before. The price is a big thing, obviously. And as far as I'm concerned, cars are always sold on price. You know what I mean? Regardless, but you new, used, whatever, there's always a price for them, you know? That's why manufacturers do deals on new, you know, because they can't sell them at list, so they do a deal to get to the point where the punters want to spend their money. So there'll always be a price point for it, but where will that be? I can't see it being that money. Obviously, there will be some people that go in and they'll spend 90 grand on the base car. You know, they'll load it up and they'll spend 90 grand as people did with the Taycans, as people do with everything. But it's when you want to come out.
Mm.
Because, you know, what happens and what we have to remember, the world has gone back to how it was. So if they can't sell these cars, they'll discount them. There'll be incentives. There'll be... And we know that Porsche are doing that now. And they never used to do that. Pre-COVID, it was never, ever a thing. Now they're doing it. They've become more of a mass brand now. So, you know, that bit will be a suck it and see. They're gonna price it. Because it's always better to price something high and come down. It's harder to price it low. It's like when the first generation Macan come out, that was too cheap, that car. Mm.
Mm.
When you think it was like Evoque money, and it was miles better than it. But I think the entry level Macan was 38 grand or something back in the day. That's why they sold so many of them.
Yeah.
And then obviously they slowly increased prices. And even when you look now, like a really good spec 2 litre petrol Macan is mid 60s, which is quite a lot of money. But when you look around the market, you're driving a Porsche, it's a good car, it's all the power that you ever need. Like, it's like, all right.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably get a bit of money off one now. The EV thing's going to be really, really interesting, because we know that, as far as we know, it's still a limited market, mate. And they're making it more expensive. So it's going to be a bit of a suck it and see moment.
I mean, I would assume they will sell them by the bucket load. I do think they will have a lot of interest from at least the Porsche community. I would assume, but you raised two really interesting points there. I think firstly, if you were a 60 grand Macan customer, it's asking a lot of you to now be spending, okay, let's go timid, 75 or 80 grand on a replacement car that's also potentially your first electric. Now, depreciation, yes, has been horrendous on electrics to date. Financing has also been pretty tough because the depreciation is so hardcore.
Yeah.
Will Porsche try and introduce some aggressive PCP to a Macan for to try and incentivize people initially? But aside and above that, I think the only thing which is interesting with this is obviously it's an all-new car based on this new PPE, I think, platform, which is shared with the Audi Q6 e-tron or A6 e-tron.
Okay.
And they're claiming 380-mile range in the base car. Now, I was the first to be like, okay, because the Taycan was famously one of the worst for claimed range and real-world range.
Yeah.
Obviously, they were an early mover with the Taycan in the EV space, but I can't remember what their claimed range was, but people would often say that a Taycan was really good on normally for 150 to 180 miles, unless you started playing all the games with, you know, preconditioning and using it at certain times and certain, not using aircon. You know, if you, most real world use, using it like a combustion engine car, 150 to 180
miles.
Yeah,
I think I was averaging sort of 170, one that I had for a couple of months. Yeah. I think it was sort of 170.
That sounds about right. So I put out a post saying this seems punchy, and somebody sent me a review of one of the prototype cars was used on a 300-mile journey at 70 miles an hour, cruising, blah, blah, and they got the full 300 miles. Now, that's not 380, but I think even if 380 isn't possible, but 290 to 300 is, that is already a big step in the right direction. That is already a big step in the right direction because that brings it more in line with what's a combustion engine Macan's fuel range. Let's not get into the whole refueling, but in terms of actual range, it's got to be similar, right? Per tank, a Macan...
2 litres, probably not much, maybe 350,
yeah.
Might be 400. I think it depends because they have different tanks as well. So you have a 75 litre tank.
Of course.
You can have a bigger
tank. But let's
say
this. So let's say this
350,
standard.
400, yeah.
Yeah. I think it will not be totally dissimilar to a combustion, which I think in terms of just using the car, of course, the actual refueling part is the conundrum. But in terms of how you're going to use the car, the journeys that you're going to use it for, at least if the expected range is similar, you can do those same kind of journeys before you have to think about the refueling or the recharging element. So I think that will be interesting to see. Real world usage will be interesting, but that's one of the higher ranges out there on the market today, for sure. And if it is a, you know, family SUV, yeah, it's important. I think it's going to be that. That's going to be, for me, the real teller. Because if this is going to be your first EV, which it's likely to be, because most people in Macans, you know, they're sitting there in Macans, I say how popular it is. This might be their first EV, their first experience. If loaded up with the kids, loaded up with the luggage on a long journey, they're doing 220 or 230 and they're struggling, that's going to start to put, I think, the bugbear in it.
In the cold and...
Yeah, exactly. You know, the various things that we know can be issues, that's going to turn people away as well. So yep. I think my takeaway is it's a little bit of an uphill battle that Porsche have set themselves for what, as you say, has been their biggest selling car historically. And they want it to still be. I think they want it to be fucking 80% of sales, this new car. Like, this is like this is the big thing for them, is this car. They've given themselves a little bit of an uphill battle, but they've surprised us before, Porsche.
What, with a Taycan?
No. It, as a brand, as a company. And let's face it, like, they could have got this wrong. We don't know. But they could have got it right as well. And we are inherently against EVs. But this could be a good one.
Yeah.
This could be a good one.
Wait and see.
Some of the stuff on paper is potentially good, but some of it is a bit like, ooh, that makes me nervous.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to rush in. If it had come out at similar money, 60, I might have been interested to take a punt on one. But
it was never going to be 60, though, mate, was it? It was never, you know, when you look at EV prices in general, not just McCann's, is that they are a lot more expensive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We know the reasons for that as well. And it was never going to be 60 grand. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, it's the age-old thing, you know, if an M3 Touring was 75 grand new, everyone would be buying them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, these manufacturers, they price these cars, they do a lot of research into it, and they price these cars. And actually, mate, they don't really care, the manufacturers. But, you know, they'll say they do, and so do the dealers.
In terms of?
Depreciation. They couldn't care
once it's sold, who cares?
Who cares? Sausage factory. Don't even care about their dealers. We've seen that now. Look at the Porsche, big example of it. Look at 911s and Taycan prices now. They're absolutely on their arse. So the manufacturers couldn't give a toss. All they care about is selling the cars.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not just picking on Porsche, I'm picking on all of them.
Mm-hmm.
BMW, Audi, Mercedes, they're all the same. All of them. So let's see. I think there'll be some huge price adjustments. I think you can put whatever PCP on them you want. You know what I mean? The PCP and the guaranteed value only ever comes into play when you're at the end of the 4 years and you want to give the car back. Well, people are getting a year in and they can't live with the car anymore, especially if you use the Taycan example, and they've got to come out of them and they're 20 grand the wrong way.
Mm.
You know, I'm not just saying Taycans. I'm saying, you know, all these deals that are, even combustion cars, all these deals that are going around at the moment, you know, there's headline figures on the M3 Touring at the moment. Yeah, fair enough. They are cheap. Good luck coming out of it, though, in a year's time.
Mm.
No chance. You've paid 10 grand to come out of it. So that's going to be the way of the world now. And we're just going to have to wait and see what happens with McCann. I've obviously going to have my reservations about it, and what people are going to do their conkers on them, as far as I'm concerned. That's what I think, because I think they're way too much money, and I don't care about the range. I understand it's better, but the concept of it still doesn't work for everyone, you know? So that's still the big elephant in the room, essentially. I know they're better, and I know that they, you know, the tech-wise, they're unbelievable now, and blah, 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 blah. But the big elephant in the room hasn't been addressed yet.
Mm-hmm.
Across all of them.
Yeah. No.
And it's still a problem.
It's why, I mean, we often get called EV bashers on this podcast, but I definitely don't consider us EV bashers. I think we're realists in the sense where Tony makes the key point. The key thing you just said there is it doesn't work for everyone. I don't think at the moment the future of mobility is a one-stop solution.
No.
I just don't think it is. I think EVs are improving hand over foot every year. The public charging network is improving hand over foot.
Absolutely.
They're going to be great cars for many, many people.
Yep.
And they offer very varying benefits. But there are plenty of people who still will need to rely on a heavily hybridized car, rely on some kind of sustainable fuel, rely on some kind of hydrogen tech. So, you know, there's so many different ways to go about this. And obviously the big focus at the moment is on EV, but we're hearing from left, right and center of all these different other opportunities and abilities. And so, yeah, for you, you're still against an EV because it doesn't fit your lifestyle. I'm trying to use this i5 to learn if an EV can fit my lifestyle. But I'm spoiled where I have other options. So when it goes wrong, I can jump in a combustion engine car still.
Yeah.
I haven't committed fully yet to an EV as my one car garage. But, you know, it's living and learning. I'm excited by the Macan, but I am definitely not motivated to go and buy one at this stage. That's where my head's at.
And I think that's what a lot of people do, by the way. People that have EVs, they still have a combustion
car on site. Backup.
But you need to be a fortunate person. That's not for the everyday man in the street. And I know the everyday man in the street ain't about to go and spend
100 grand on a Macan.
I know it's targeting a different person, and the chances of someone that's spending 70, 80, 90 grand on a Macan, they have got another car.
Mm.
I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is when reality sets in and the dealer and the manufacturer talk the car up and get these customers into the car and they say, this is the new way forward. The customer buys the car. A year down the line, they go, oh, I've made a mistake here. And then it's 20 grand to come out of it. Because that's reality.
Yeah, that's
what's going to happen.
Well, and if you look at what Taycans have done,
yeah.
If in 18 months' time, a Macan is 50 grand, bloody hell, then I'm moving. Because a Taycan at 50 grand, which they are at, by the way, now, people, they're not as attractive because it's old tech in the world of EVs. Yes, it's a great car, but they're old tech in the world of EVs and they had their niggles at the start, Taycans. They have their issues. If this Macan proves to be a fantastic car but suffers the horrendous depreciation that all EVs seem to suffer at 45, 50 grand with 1,000 miles on the clock, 2,000 miles on the clock, then I think it starts to be interesting.
But also then as well, sorry to butt in, have you contradicted yourself a little bit? Because battery and technology moves on so quickly, mm-hmm. by the time the Macan is 45, 50 grand, there'll be another car out that you'll go, oh, well, that'll be 40 or 50 grand, I'll have that one instead.
Potentially.
Because things move on so quickly in that world, you know.
Very good point.
We're already seeing the advancements in the way it is. And I get a little bit fed up talking about EVs on here, but the problem is it's the future, mate.
Yeah, so it's only new cars that are launching at EVs. It's a
topic that we have to talk about because we're a automotive YouTube channel that talk about cars.
We're a podcast, Tony.
We're a podcast and an automotive YouTube channel, no?
We're a podcast that uploads to YouTube.
Okay, fine.
Don't get that wrong.
Yeah, okay, fine.
Just
we're a podcast.
Unsewn our entire branding. Just a reminder, audio-only versions available earlier in the week. God damn it.
YouTube's cancelled. But yeah, you know, it's what is the topic on everyone's lips, so we got to talk about it.
Of course.
You know, so...
Well, next week we'll be talking about V12 EVs Ferraris.
Again.
Yeah. Well, let's watch this space. I hope to be able to experience a Macan soon enough, and I will let you know my thoughts. But yeah, let us know your thoughts below. Are you intrigued? Are you excited? Is it the first electric SUV that's got you going? I mean, I don't think it will because we saw about its price. It outpriced so many people. I mean, I think there have been other EVs that we've spoken about even in the last few weeks that are kind of far more exciting to people because they're 30 grand, not 100.
I'll be amazed
anyway.
If it's the same people that have bought historically the 2-litre petrol Macan.
They're going to jump in a new one.
That go in at... Because don't forget, their 2-litre petrol Macan's probably worth 35, 40 grand. It's double the money to get into a base EV one.
Oh, it's all a bit messy. Anyway... We've been battering on enough, so we're going to draw an end to today's episode. I hope you've enjoyed it. As I say, if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcast, thank you so much for doing so. Feel free to give us a review or a rating and stay tuned because future episodes will be coming to you nice and early, a little bit sooner than the YouTube channel that Tony mentioned. But if you are watching us on YouTube, subscribe now, turn on notifications, etc. If you want to follow Tony between now and next week's episode, you can do so at Tony Grubberwood Car Sales on most social media platforms. You can follow me at Seen Through Glass, and you can follow this podcast at Behind the Glass_podcast. In the weeks ahead, we've some pretty big announcements about some moves we're making for this year, some events and things that you're going to want to attend. So some dates for your diary will be trickled out next week. So make sure you don't miss that episode. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.